This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too. So the ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the Back of the Nest Match Report. I'm your host, Mike. With me is Nick. And we're going to give you a short but sweet show today because nobody wants to dwell on the shit show that was the 3-0 home defeat to Burnley, who, as it turns out, are actually 1970s Brazil in disguise. Join us after this.
The Match Report. Sponsored by Pitch Sport. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Yes, hello to you hardy souls who are actually bothering to listen to a pod about Palace after the toss we were served up on Saturday afternoon. Those of you not listening, obviously you can't hear this, but I can't fault you at all. But those of you that are, you're the reason we do this. Thank you. We'll try our best to not talk too much about the game itself. Nick, you doing okay other than the game?
Yeah. I mean, I had an operation to remove a spot on my neck on Tuesday. I've only been able to turn my head since about Thursday, but that was less painful than the game on Saturday. It's just dreadful. So
excellent. Well, that's the positivity we need. Let's have a little bit of positivity, actually, because we're going to look at this week at Palace. And we can start with... So we're recording on Valentine's Day. So Nick is my date for the day. You'll notice there's no Hambo. A, because he's been doing every show, every live talk through, and he needs a rest. And B, funny enough, recording a Palace pod after a 3-0 defeat on Valentine's Day wasn't a particularly popular option for our presenters. So, it's the two of us. We're recording on Sunday, and the game today between Palace Women and London Bees, that happens 2 p.m. on Sunday. And Palace Women absolutely destroyed London Bees, 5-0. So Bianca Baptiste scoring two, Cole Jade Haynes scoring two. So it's 4-0 at half-time. And then Kate Knackhill in the second half with another one. So a 5-0 win over London Bees, who I know have been on the end of some poor results this season. But it was quite interesting because had London Bees won, I think there'd have only been 2 points between the sides. But Palace now, they've opened up an enormous 8-point lead above London Bees, and they're fourth from bottom, way above Charlton. So good going for Palace Women. That is something positive to look at. And then also wanted to mention Yaroslav Yak. He scored against Rakov. They won 4-2 against a team I can't even pronounce, but you know, that's a bit of positivity as well. And one more piece of positivity. The United game that was planned for the 20th of March has been postponed because they're still in the FA Cup. So the positive thing could be if Wilf is still out, then that might be one less game for us to be dealing with no Wilf. So that's this week in Palace, other than, the shit show we're about to talk about, I suppose.
Do we have to?
Well, I mean, there was a couple of people that tweeted us to implore that we didn't record a pod. But on the times we've been on the end of a serious cane in the past and haven't done a pod because no one's wanted to, people have called us out on it. So, yeah, let's do it. We're here, Nick.
Through rain and snow, we might as well talk about it. Really?
Exactly. Staying in the rain and all that kind of stuff. Let's jump into the game with a quote post-match from our glorious leader, Roy.
Well, Roy, the result, of course, disappointing. What about the performance? How did it compare to what you hoped for and expected?
Well, it got nowhere near it, of course. And once again, we give ourselves that enormous problem by conceding goals so early in the game. They started the game well. We certainly didn't. And suddenly we're 2-0 down. It's 8 minutes gone. And, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, the second half we'll put a few things right and start maybe to play a little bit more football and maybe with some luck claw ourselves back into the game. But then we concede within 2 minutes of the second half a third goal. And then, of course, you're playing against Burnley, and Burnley are very, very good. They're a good team. They're particularly good at what they do. And once again, I'm afraid, like after the Leeds game, I could do nothing but to stand here and admit we were beaten by a better team and that we have to be disappointed that we couldn't do better ourselves.
Nick, what's your thoughts on that? Dissect that for me.
Well, there's two things that spring to mind. I actually detest Roy Hodgson now. And I didn't want to be there. I just can't even look at him on the touchline anymore. The second, with a little bit of luck, I thought we could, I'm so tempted to say make it through the night, we could get some goals back in the second half. It's not a little bit of luck, Roy. It's about setting your team up to beat a, quite frankly, piss-poor opposition. And the fact that Burnley have done a double over us just shows how awful we are at the moment. What was it, 3 minutes for one match or 4 minutes for another match or 2 minutes, 3 minutes and 4 minutes. So are we looking at Brighton to score in the fifth minute just to keep it all kind of, you know, looking good like that? It's surely he's got to be looking at having conceded 2 early goals against Newcastle and Leeds. He's got to be thinking, right, this is our main thing, is not to let one in early doors. And the fact that we have is just pathetic. Even if we just get 11 men behind the ball for the first 10 minutes, because the moment that goes in, their heads aren't up anyway, are they? Let's face it, right? They don't look like a team that want to play together, do they?
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into that when we go through the listener, the comments, but you're quite right. The two things that jumped out at me in that interview was... that he said there was nothing he could do standing on the touchline. Obviously, once we're 3-0 down, there's nothing he could do. But yeah, as you say, he's giving Burnley an enormous amount of credit and saying because we went 2-0 down, that's why things didn't go our way. And it's happened 3 games in a row. There was actually a post-match interview with Gyro on the Palace website, and I'll give you a quote from it. He said, bear in mind English isn't his first language, but it's unbelievable that I think this is the third game in a row that we concede so early in a game and we just make it so difficult for ourselves. I wish I knew the problem so I could solve it. So he's saying it's unbelievable. That's the word he uses. And he wishes he knew the problem. He's obviously not getting any leadership from Roy on ideas as to why. You wonder from that quote whether it's even been in discussion. I mean, presumably it has. It'd be ridiculous that it hadn't. But you're talking about a man who I think most of us agree is one of the bright spots of an otherwise fairly nothing season, saying that he doesn't know the reason. And if he did, he'd do something about it. This is a man that's screening in front of the defence. So it's not a good sign at all. And it wouldn't surprise me if Brighton scored early. They're on great form. They managed to get another point from Villa. They're catching us up, and it might not be too long before they overtake us, which would be absolutely tragic. Let's go for a few stats from the game, because I was surprised to find we'd actually had 13 shots. They had 16. We had 10 from open play, 3 from set pieces. We shaded the possession, and to me that's never a good sign, because we never win when we've got more than 50% possession. But you know, for to have 13 shots and not score a goal is not great. We were pretty most of our chances came down the flanks. According to whoscored.com, which is obviously the Bible for where we get most of our stats, 74% of our chances came from the flanks. But I think what summed it up for me was in the first half, Nathaniel Clyne put in a beautiful cross and neither of our Belgian two were anywhere near it. So talk us through the lineup with the two of them up front. I know it was the first time that it happened, Nick. And what went wrong? What didn't happen that perhaps should have happened? Before we go into the defending, let's talk about what went wrong up front.
Well, God bless Batshuayi, but is he really wanting to do it for us? Is he playing to get signed permanently? I don't think he is. And he was laughing and joking at 3-0 with the Burnley players. And I just thought it's the wrong attitude. We've got all these players out of contract. I'm surprised we didn't start Mateta because he's got something to prove. And I thought he's got a nice touch on him. And when he did eventually come on, he seemed to do more than Batshuayi and Benteke did altogether. Now, Benteke, bless him,
Can I just stop you before you carry on there? I do remember when we first signed Sørloth that you said a very similar thing about him. So just want to put that in there.
In my words. But no, he seemed to want to do stuff. I don't know why he's starting back. Sure, I can see the two Belgians up together. It's a difficult one because our team just seems so unbalanced. And I'm looking at this lineup and they don't look like it's a bad team aside from the fact we've got an average age of about 58. But Kouyaté seems to have lost his way in defence. Him and Dan were all over the place for that first goal. We're a team known, or used to be known, for quick breakaways, aren't we? And we just don't do that anymore. So get the ball forward, get forward quick, bang the cross in, and get the big blokes to head it in. It's just not happening at all, is it?
Yeah, I can see why that wasn't happening, because there was times yesterday, particularly from Clyne, who I thought was one of the bright sparks going forward in the game. The balls coming in weren't met with anything because the urgency of going forward from Benteke and Batshuayi, they seem to be so low on confidence that when you're talking about the big guys heading it in, unless it landed on their heads, there was at no point did you see them jumping through the air to try and head something. And they've obviously got lost in the way we've been attacking over the past few months to suddenly knock crosses in. I'm not that surprised that they don't know what to do about it. I don't know if Mateta is necessarily that kind of player either, but it was tragic to see balls fly across the six-yard box. And neither of those two strikers, both of who have played for their country, both of who have played at the very highest level of European football, being anywhere near it. So,
I've watched a lot of football this weekend, and one goal this weekend particularly stands out is I was actually watching St Johnstone v Celtic earlier.
Funny enough, I wasn't, but carry on.
I don't blame you. But Celtic scored a brilliant cross, and you could see that they knew where to cross the ball into, and Eduardo knew exactly where to run to for the cross to come in. And the bloke was in a tight spot when he crossed it, but he just got it in near post, and Eduardo knew exactly where the cross was going to be even before the cross went in. It's almost like they'd practiced it and said, right, when you get your crosses in, get them in here and I'll run there and I'll try and get onto the end of it. There just doesn't seem to be any of that.
I mean, there's got to be a reason that he started PVA over Mitchell, and that was presumably because he was hoping, as he did, for PVA to knock balls in. So there's some kind of communication breakdown between the plan and what's happening. Is it a case that we just, as ever, don't have decent strikers when Wilf's not on the pitch? Or is it Benteke's role that was working earlier in the season is totally gone now and he's back to just being the target man, which he's not very good at? I honestly don't know. I think the reason so many people are calling for Roy's head is that there's not even a game plan we can talk about having not worked, so that we could understand, like the two of us don't seem to understand what the plan was. Maybe if there was four of us on the chat, somebody might have known, but I honestly don't know what the game plan was yesterday.
I think half of it is down to we don't seem to have any fight or any verve or impetus or gumption. You know, the last, even the wins we had, the other team wanted the game more than we seem to. Now, whether that's because we're in relative safety and lots of people are saying, oh, yeah, we won't get relegated. So it's kind of half-assed now because we think we're safe. I don't actually think we are. You know, technically, just watching Fulham at the moment beating Everton. You know, West Brom got their result against Man United earlier. It's we just don't seem to be at the races at all. And that's got to be down to the manager geeing the players up. And I think he's lost them. If they're fighting for the ball, they're going to get in there for the crosses. And they should be shouting from the touchline, why aren't you getting in there? He should be going do lally, but he just stands there like that. Dishevelled out, just pulling faces. It's just so sad to watch.
I'm going to be a sort of surrogate Hambo and say what I'd expect him to say right now, which is when people say players have down tools and that kind of thing, I really don't think that they do. You know, they still want to play for Palace. People saying they're not playing for the shirt, that kind of thing. They're just at a loss for what to do with the tactics that it's clear to them are not going to win us football matches. So that you've got situations like their first goal when Dan and PVA with the horrible mess that they got themselves into, that doesn't come from a team that knows what their role is for a winning formula. They know what their role is to try and beat out a 0-0. But that, you know, that's not going to make players play without mistaking them. Like, you can't expect players to not be nervous as hell with the record that they've had recently and the fact that they clearly can see, like us, that... Well, I mean, good point there from the dog. Well, I think we'll just keep that in. Let's not edit that out. That's one of the best points that's been made in the pod so far. I mean, you can't expect them to not make mistakes because... It's got to the point where if they do make a mistake, they know as soon as we go down 1-0, we've lost. They're just going to be panicking. So, I don't think it's that they're not trying. I just think that there's nothing else they can do. The mentality is for failure. And I'm sure Hambo would go on a long diatribe, but he's not here. And people don't want to hear 45 minutes on the game, I wouldn't have thought. A few... Let's try and find some bright sparks. Like you say, Mateta came on. He looked a decent target man. He looked like he wanted the ball, which was nice. I'm not sure that we're going to get the best out of him in the current situation with the 4-4-2. I think we might have to wait for a different manager for him to sort of sparkle with his skill set. We'll find out. Townsend looked decent to me. He gave the side something that maybe they didn't have before he came on. But that leads me to ask why he wasn't starting in the first place, because Ayew's been playing every game this season and he's certainly not a right midfielder.
What's upsetting is if we are mid-table and we're or sort of below mid-table and we're safe, we've only got, seven people on the bench, four of who are defenders. We're not picking any of the under 23s. I know a lot of them gone out on loan, but now's the time. Surely we should be blooding them in so that if we have got a lot of players out next season who've left because of contractual reasons, then at least they'll have had a little bit of experience and won't be coming in next season cold if we do need them. You're definitely right about Townsend. He did give us a bit of impetus and he wanted to drag us up a bit. But it's, I don't know, their mind's not on the game, is it? I mean, the highlight, I think Patrick retweeted it, was Van Aanholt got the ball from a throw-on and just kicked it out again. And it's just like their mind's not on the game. What's the reason for it?
That definitely summed up the game. You're talking about Townsend threw him the ball about 3 yards from a throw-in and he kicked it straight back off again. To me, the highlight of the game was the fact that Townsend's cut that ridiculous lockdown hair that every time there was a bit of rain on was sort of drooping down both sides. He's looking much sharper now, so Jermaine Jennes will be happy with that.
Who is cutting footballers' hair? Because I thought they were all shut and whatever. There must be a way around that. What are they doing? Are they just all married hairdressers?
Well, I don't know if he's gone with the same as me, but needs must. I my skill set in cutting my own hair over the last 11 months has improved tenfold. He did have some tram lines, I think. So perhaps there was something that, you know, they might have a hairdresser in the bubble, I suppose. That's the important question.
You're a bit of a punk. Well, just to keep us away from football, do you still put soap in your hair to keep it spiky? I'm sure you used to do that back in the day.
So if you've got a Mohican, there's not a lot of ways to keep your hair up. I haven't had a Mohican in many years. Honestly, my head's too big. If you've got a big head, it doesn't suit you. It doesn't suit you. Right, let's have a quick break to discuss our sponsor. We're not going to go for too long. I'm aware that a lot of you listen to all of our shows, and you'll keep hearing similar talks that go on for ages about Manscaped. So today it's not a long pod, and we're not going to bore you too much. But we've had some amazing feedback. Clearly, the products are awesome. People have been enjoying them. As more of the team have been testing it as well. I think Hesketh got himself the lawnmower. He's happy. I think all I can say today is get yourself over to manscaped.com. You got 20% off and you got free shipping if you use the code BOTN, as in back of the nest. Just check out the products. They've got all kind of stuff for just keeping yourself trim down there, keeping yourself clean, and generally doing yourself a favour.
I'm just going to interject there. I was 50 bloody two this week, which makes me really, really old. So the whole kind of personal grooming downstairs passed me by, but I've got it, and it's bloody great. I couldn't believe the difference. Never ever thought about doing trimming down there before, and it just kind of leaves more room in your pants. The lotions and potions you get with it are absolutely brilliant. And every time I have a wee, I have a little squirt of the scent on there. And it's just really, really nice. And I wish I was younger so I could have used it for longer. But yeah, when we got this stuff through, I thought, what the bloody hell is all this about? And I was genuinely pleasantly surprised by it all. The perfume, the aftershave, refined, I put it on a par with the Jean-Paul Gaultier that I normally wear. I've actually started using the refined instead. I put extra on today, Valentine's Day. I'm doing a pod. So, the missus loves it.
Yeah, so you've put it on and then you've just abandoned it on Valentine's Day evening to do a pod with me.
Don't do what I did, though, because I thought it was for your balls at first and it stings.
Yeah, no, that's... I would have thought most listeners would be aware of that. But there you go, 52-year-old middle-aged man. Even he's a fan. Just have a look. Manscaped.com. You're doing us a favour. You're doing them a favour. And as we've said before, you'll be doing yourself a favour. So get over there. BOTN is the code. No shipping, 20% off. So that will do for that today.
Back of the Nest, sponsored by Pitch Sport. Fantime videos, choose your match day squad, post match ratings, and much more. Available to download on the App Store and Google Play. PitchDMM.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Right, what we're going to do now, rather than going over the minutiae of the game, because nobody needs to see that again, nobody wants to watch Match of the Day for that reason, etc., etc., we asked people for their questions, and I was stunned the amount of replies that came in. We had to put a line under it in the end. So thank you for... We've read them all. I think they're still coming through, but we've just gone through a load here. So going to read some of them out and then get Nick to reply to one, and then I'll reply to the next one. Let's start with a simple question from Dean Hyatt. Nick, how is Roy still in the job? Question mark.
That's a million-dollar question. That's the question we were asking about Alan Pardew, 17 games on from when he should have been got rid of. How is he still in a job? I don't know. Maybe there aren't any alternatives. Maybe it'll cost the club too much money to get rid of him. Maybe he's got photos of Parrish in an uncompromising position, because I can't think of any other reason.
I don't think Parrish would be that bothered if people had pictures of him in a compromising position. Andy the Twat, 1992, again, asked why the club haven't got rid of Roy yet. He said, having watched the watch along, I know you're discussing maybe COVID is a reason why. Chelsea made changes in the same circumstance, so why not us? It's excuses after excuses. Funny how the club are quiet today. Yeah, it's interesting. Perhaps COVID's a reason. I would imagine it's more financial. Again, we have no inside knowledge, but considering we've got 29 points, and as Terence pointed out in the preview pod, somehow Roy always manages to get the odd win. We probably only need two more. You know, we're still 14 points above the drop zone. Well, it'd be 13 maybe after this evening, but I would imagine that. They won't do it unless something drastic happens. Chelsea's different. You know, the expectations are very much higher there. And they had the option of a top quality manager. I don't know if we've got that or not. Just good points.
Parrish is a fan, surely, and he watches the game. Surely he must have been as cheesed off as us watching it.
Well, I mean, he's made decisions based on... you know, games against teams that it really hurts to lose against in the past. We've got a history of changing managers when say the Millwall game, when we lost, what was it, 3-0. It happens. So I don't think that he hasn't been reading every time somebody's tagged him in. And just to say, a lot of people have tagged us and him into tweets. Personally, not a fan of. Involving people unless they want to be involved. So that's probably the reason why we didn't continue and reply to those messages. But yes, I'm sure he's seen them. So a message from Luca Fagenzi. He asks, who we'd want replacing Roy and why, Nick?
Well, I'm watching the Fulham game in one eye and they are playing nice football. I'd quite like Scott Parker at Palace, if that's how his teams play. Heard a lot about Thomas Frank. I don't think Brentford will let him go because they're flying. I'm not sure about how. I don't like him anyway. He looks like a fun human Thunderbird as it is. That'd put me off. Dougie till the end of the season, till we find somebody. Even Paddy McCarthy, who's got the under-18s playing really well. Surely he's got more idea than Roy has. Surely he can G the players up a bit more. Even Sean Derry. But Roy ain't the answer. So, you know, I'd settle for Frank de Boer again for a few games if it meant getting rid of Roy.
That is a damning indictment. I mean, there's no chance that Dougie's in a... He's got it pretty sweet. I don't see him wanting to deal with the hassle. For me, I would like Emma Hayes. I think that she... Well, first of all, it would be amazing if Palace were the first team to take a punt on a female manager. But I think she's absolutely incredible. You know, she's won plenty of silverware. She's an incredible pundit. She's, every time you hear her speak, I just think she's awesome. That would be who I'd want. But you know, there's nothing to say she's not comfortable where she is winning trophies. I don't know why she'd necessarily want to deal with the stress.
Probably too good for us as well, truth be told.
Yeah. So Pudders has asked, What is the key to our leaky defence? Deliberately didn't cover this earlier, so we can chat about it now. He's had some thoughts. The lack of any attacking threat causing us to defend for 90 minutes is one option. Option two, they're all shit. I mean, I don't think that's true. Point three could be that the combinations of players are shit. I think in a nicer way, he's saying, have we not currently got the right combinations for a central pair? Is the option four, we're actually defending well and just a bit unlucky?
It's little bits of all of them, really. What baffles me is why Kelly isn't being given a chance. But we saw the mix-up, as you said, between PVA and Dan yesterday. There was a moment, I can't remember if it was the Leeds game or the Newcastle game, where Kuarty and somebody clattered heads because they're obviously not communicating with each other. Is it a lack of leadership? Is Gaeta, you know, commanding from the back? Is he shouting as much as perhaps Jules did? I don't know. Offering advice from some behind them. But there's a thing, is it in golf? They call it the jits, J-I-T-S, where you can't putt, but normally you're really, really good. Are we getting to that stage where actually, because we've been so bad, it's just self-perpetuating?
I think you're quite right. For my two cents on it, I do think the combinations due to injuries have been a real problem. I think Kuarte perhaps slightly off form, like you say, but you can't imagine. I know that Mitchell said he's a real leader and he shouts to him the whole time, but I don't think he's the leader that, say, Sacco is. Sorry, I was watching Saka today as Arsenal destroyed Leeds. I just got him on the brain. Sacco, you know, is a real leader of men. I'm not sure we necessarily got that now. But more than that, I just think that the players need a lot of games together and it's not happening because of the amount of injuries there are.
Sacco's got a degree of calmness about him, hasn't he? I know everybody castigates him for his mistakes, but he makes less mistakes than everybody else when you look at the stats. But yeah, he just seems to calm everything down. So maybe not having that exuding onto other players doesn't help.
Okay, the next question is from Ryan Della Hunte, and he's asked, how many people have actually had to check that we've won 8 games? I actually counted through earlier and it took me 3 goes to work out that the league hadn't given us extra points by mistake. It's true. For us to be on 29 points is incredible. And that is the reason that you're still going to have people saying, Roy's the man for the job, because he gets the points. On the other hand, we go to football for escapism and to be entertained. And when we have to think about these 8 games and we can't remember them, it's because our minds have been clouded by some of the shit we've ended up watching. He does put it out of the bag. You know, we got 2 wins on the bounce and I can see that happening again, perhaps when Wilf comes back. But that points to me what people have been saying this week, that actually the person that keeps us up is Wilfried Zaha. And it's not so much it's not so much Roy. And we're going to take a quick break from questions, actually, to have another clip from Roy on that very discussion point. So let's see what he says about the Zaha injury.
People will point to, obviously, Wilfried missing and bring up the stats of the matches that you don't win and when he's not there. Does that get to the players, do you think, when he's not there as well? The fact that we talk about it in the media and people look at the stats, but do the players have that in mind at all, do you think?
Well, they shouldn't have. You know, the players who are playing in his place, Wilf's place, they shouldn't be thinking that way, not at all. And I'm not certain that it would filter down to the other players either. I think that for the players who are selected to play, if Wilf's out there with them or Wilf is not with them, that shouldn't be of any major consequence. It's up to them to give the performance that they know they can give and to bring out the very best of their play. So if that is the case, that, you know, the players are seriously believing that the only way we can win is with Wilf, then the club's in big trouble because he's 28, 29 years of age and he can't play till he's 40.
Yeah, that got cut off slightly short. But yeah, he ended it with, Zaha can't play till he's 40. And that comment absolutely stunned me. I know sometimes Roy gets a bit spiky in interviews and he can say stuff that he doesn't necessarily mean. But if he thinks that the players don't think about Wilf's absence, especially when they're asked it by every pundit after the game, he's living on another planet, isn't he?
Yeah. Have we got a sports psychologist at the moment at the club? Because aren't they meant to be the ones that sort the players' heads out?
I'd imagine that every team does. But, you can't get away if your best player's injured. It's going to come up in conversation and it's going to affect your confidence. And for him to just deny that, it seems like he's so out of touch with the mentality of players that it's worrying.
The fact is, Wilf has got goals, but he's nowhere near as good as he has been previous seasons. You know, there were times when Eze, Wilf and Christian Benteke were pinging balls to each other really well, like they'd really connected and knew where each other was going to be. So we do miss that, but you know, we can't be a one-man team because that doesn't all go well if he goes in the summer. Which, to be perfectly honest, I wouldn't blame him if he did. Wilf, that is.
I disagree about him being below his best this season, but more than that, the only way that we won the games that he wasn't involved in last season is because our defence was rock solid. We know we need to score at least two for a victory at the moment, and that just doesn't come without Wilf. So if he thinks that that's not noticed by the players, then there's something badly wrong. Next question from Daniel Schilling. The fan base is in civil war regarding Roy in or Roy out. But the bigger question is, Burger King or McDonald's, Pizza Hut or Domino's? Nick?
None of them.
None of them. No.
I definitely, if I had to go for a pizza, it'd be Pizza Express. But I prefer KFC to Burger King or McDonald's because they do the vegan burgers. The Burger King vegan burgers, they do on the same bloody grill that they do the meat ones. What's the point?
Yeah, and you've got to ask it with no mayonnaise. McDonald's, I like the spicy veggie wrap, so I'll go with that. And they're only £2. Pizza Hut or Domino's? Well, I'm going to go with Papa John's because they do the vegan cheese, and their pizzas are enormous. And a 6'5" guy needs a big pizza. So there we go. I hope that helps. I mean, people are perfectly entitled to reply and tell us that we're wrong. But next question from Dino. Do we think there's an agreement in place for a new management team, hence why players have downed tools and look not to be performing for Roy? Now, I want to say that, I'm not a big fan of the term down tools. I just think that they have lost the direction of what they think they need to do. And their confidence, as Nick said, is at its lowest. But Nick, answer that one for us.
I hope there's an agreement in place for a new management team. But surely, if there is, the players would be up in their game a bit and fighting for each other a bit more so that they actually stay with the team next season. If they want to be Crystal Palace players, regardless of who's the manager, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see that. I think that ties in with the next question from Sam. In an ideal world with replacements readily available, list the players you would definitely keep, thinking purely practically and without sentiment. I'm of the opinion that I don't think there's many players would get rid of. I think financially, the club still needs to get its wage to income level down. So as much as I love Mamadou Sakho, I think the time's come that the financial burden he is because he's always injured. I think it's probably time that he goes somewhere where he's happier to go. They've already got rid of Max Meyer, so you know that was £80,000 or whatever it is off the wage bill. I don't think the players is the issue. I think we're still a couple of players light, but that's often the case at the end of a season. For me, it's just a change of plan and a new start. In the same way as if you've got a manager at work and people are not really working to their potential for him. Sometimes getting a new manager to look after people is the way forward. So I'm going to leave it there on that one. For reasons of time, I'll get you to answer the next one, Nick. Will Wraxall has asked us to be constructive and positive. I think we've done that as well as we possibly can. What out of contract players would you keep? Which of the under-23s would you promote to the first team squad? And we'll leave the transfer market talk for much later on in the season, I think.
Yeah, so who's, remind me, who's out of contract? Who have we got off the top of your head?
It's difficult to know because the team, the club keeps extensions close to their chest so that they can release them on deadline day and claim they've just been done. It's clear PDA, for example, is a player that's going to be out of contract, Sacco. But I think some of the players that people worry about, they probably shouldn't.
On current form, I'm not happy with PVA at the moment. And normally, when we have a moan about PVA, he'll pop up with a goal and everybody's happy with him for a couple of weeks again. But he seems to have lost his way a bit. And, you know, I am coming round to your way of thinking. Perhaps it is bad management that's led to that. I see that he's got some suggestions there as well for himself. But I'm thinking about those coming through. Pearick might come through. Scott Banks has always looked good in the videos I've seen. Trying to think, Woods. Is it Woods? The under-23s as well. And maybe even some of the under-18s, because they seem to be flying high under Paddy McCarthy, don't they?
Yeah, it's very easy to have grass is greener syndrome. So Will suggested he'd like to see Klein and Townsend stay with a pay cut. I don't think financially Townsend's, you know, for me, he's got to stay. He's done great things this season. Nathaniel Klein has been, for me, the biggest plus of the season. I absolutely loved him last time around, and he's come straight back in. So I'm very happy with that. And that frees up Ferguson to play perhaps on the left. So you've got Mitchell and Ferguson's as options. PVA put, I wouldn't have thought he will stay. And I think there'll be a few players in those positions. So I think it's probably best to see how things work out. I'm sure we'll discuss that further on as the season progresses, but we're bringing it up now because there's bugger all to talk about from the game. Let's get through these quite quickly now. Jedi, with the Americans wanting to sell the club, is this why all these contracts are ending in June 2021? Honestly, I think that's probably seeing a little bit of a little bit. That's adding two and two and making five. We don't know as people in this pod enough about that to make comment. I don't think we don't have particularly inside knowledge on that kind of thing. It's interesting to see about the rumours along with the sale, but you know, as Paris has said before, offers come in all the time and he plays them down. I don't think we're in a position to comment on that. JB7, a player like Batshuayi is never going to play for the shirt. Nick, a quick sentence on that.
Yeah, well, I mentioned it earlier on, didn't I? It really pissed me off watching him laughing and joking yesterday rather than pulling his socks up and getting in. He's offside more often than not. He's no Paul Stewart, is he, as a loney? I'd rather we got one of the under-23s in, you know, even if they're on the bloody bench, and give them a try, because Batshuayi is going to be somewhere else next season. I don't know whether there's a clause in the loan contract that says he's got to play so many games, but he's obviously not working.
Yeah, his form hasn't been great, has it? I was watching the test match, and as we recalled, England are getting trounced in the second test, and it annoyed me to see Ollie Stone smiling. So yes, I can see why that annoys you. I just think mainly he's just not been in the form that he was the first time around, and he'll go back to Chelsea, and they'll probably sell him on. Love Cowardice and some Kim Choi, Stuart Cox, excellent name. Also, excellent moustache in your profile picture there, Stuart.
He is, isn't he?
It's excellent. Proper Cuban drug lord look. General consensus is that we'll stay up, but I'm not so sure it'll be that easy. We could be considered the worst team in the Premier League. One of the bottom three could make a run. It is, as Terence has said, very difficult to get relegated from the Premier League, particularly this season. I think because we've got enough points on the board earlier in the season, we're going to be fine. We probably only need a couple more wins. You can't imagine that the teams at the bottom are going to get more than perhaps a point a game on average. So we're going to be there or thereabouts, but we're not going to be. We're not going to go down. It would be stunning. The last time I checked the odds, it was something like 40 to 1. And they don't put 40 to 1 odds at Bet 365 for no reason. So,
do you remember Oldham?
I do, but I just don't think that situation is the same this season. We've got teams that really hamstrung themselves by not getting any points the first 20 games of the season. You can't do that and stay up. So I think next season is what we've got to worry about if things don't change managerially. Kevin, if the fans were at Selhurst, Roy would be long gone, right or wrong? One word answer, Nick.
I can't, because we were asking for Pardew to go and he never did.
Yeah, so. we were asking Roy to bring Max on a few times and he never did. So, Meraki, do you ever think, fuck it, I can't be asked, especially after such a disappointing performance yesterday, ends with Palace till I die? Yes, we do, but for the same reason, we're Palace till we die. And yeah, for some reason we volunteered to do these fucking podcasts. So excuse my French, but yes, yeah, we couldn't be asked, but we should.
Parrish is a businessman. We're going to be itching to go back next season. I can't see us being at Selhurst this season with the lockdown and everything. Perhaps next season, come September, we might be able to, August, September, there might be a chance. Will this turgid football encourage people to actually buy season tickets, or is Parrish banking on people itching to go back so much they'll just pay you to watch any old shit anyway, which I have done for the last 10 years, to be honest.
I think Terence was on something when he mentioned once. I think we were about 12,000 season tickets this season last time I heard. I don't know if it's gone up, but I don't think it'll be particularly too much of an issue. There's a long waiting list, so people that do give it up, you know, he can afford to then charge people more. So there could be a financial incentive. It's a cynical and nasty thing to say, and it might not be the case, but I don't think he's going to have a problem. You know, we've been in the Premier League for 8 seasons. Kids are growing up Palace fans in a way that they never did when I was growing up. So I don't think there'll be a lack of demand. So I'm not sure. We'll have to see. But it purely depends on whether Roy will stay, I think. And we'll end on a couple of rumours. Just Call Me Sanchez wanting to know about the Cooper rumours. So that's Steve Cooper. It is Steve, isn't it? From Swansea. Funny looking guy. Young, born in 79, I think, when I checked earlier. So only a few years older than myself. Incredible defensive record for Swansea this season. But I don't know enough about him to comment. And quite honestly, you can cherry pick managers that are doing well in the Championship at the moment, but it's always a dangerous game. I think we have to sort of live it up to the club to make informed decisions over long periods, looking at managers like they did, looking at players like Eze. So yeah, and then Martin Carter, the very last comment, said about Thomas Frank. So that's the Brentford manager. Nick, you mentioned him earlier.
Again, I had a look at some Brentford forums and I had a look at his record. I mean, he's won 53 and lost 31. He's got a 46% win rate, which is really good. But just player comment, fan comments on the griffinpark.org. He's confident but humble. He's got brilliant in-game management. And most crucially, players get better under his coaching. That's the sort of person you want, isn't it? But they're flying Brentford. He ain't going anywhere because I think Brentford are going up. Why would he leave a project halfway through when he's sort of really, you know, I think they're banked on to go up unless they do what Leeds did 3 or 4 years ago and absolutely go into abject failure towards the end of the season. But he's not going anywhere, is he?
No, that's a good point. Why would he leave when they've got a winning mentality? I would say as well, Brentford, from what I've seen this season, they score a lot of goals, but they concede a lot of goals. And I'm not sure that's, for a counter-attacking team like Palace aspire to be, I'm not sure that's the way to go for a management style. So just before we go, a quick word on Pitch Sport, our long-term sponsors. 53% of Palace fans before the game were confident about getting a result against Burnley. So 53% of Pitch Sport Palace fans were wrong. You can follow us on there. Join us. It's fun. You know, you can predict the teams, predict the results. Nice little league that Hambo's caning. My code, if you want to follow me, is ENEYDK. And Nick's is ZSPZVW. But yeah, get downloading. It's a Palace back app and they do good things. So yeah, that's just about it. I think we won't go for the usual hour because you don't need to hear that. Thanks for listening. Thanks to everyone who got in touch. Whether we use the messages or not, it always helps. We always develop our show plan around what you've written in. Occasionally, you just write in after we've recorded. So, you know, keep them coming for next time. Please engage with the sponsors. They support us. They keep it going. You know, we don't get paid or anything, but we've got costs. And also, can you like, follow, subscribe us on all the usual socials, especially YouTube? DR's been doing monstrous things on there. You know, if you're not usually a YouTube person, it might have passed you by, but we do watch-alongs for all the games, fan comments afterwards from panel members who never come on the pod. So if you're sick of hearing about us, then go and listen to them. It's excellent. Just give it a subscribe if you're on YouTube. If you could give us an iPod, an Apple review, that would be absolutely amazing because it just means that Palace fans get to hear about us. And that's always beneficial. The preview team will be back before next Monday's game against Brighton. I'm absolutely fucking bricking it. Nick, are you?
I'm really, really not looking forward to that at all. Part of me almost wants it to be the game that gets rid of Roy if he hasn't gone by then. That's the only shining light for it. I've just got to shout out for the watch along. I've watched the last four of them. They are fantastic. It really helps you. It, because you're watching the game on your own and you're not used to being around people at Selhurst. It is like being at Selhurst because the comments are typical. And it's weird watching how Chris and DR have just become resigned to losing every week. They're not getting angry anymore. It's just become matter of fact for them. But yeah, it's a good watch.
There you go. You get to hear Hambo not being angry. If that's if that's not the best possible sell, I don't know what is. So yeah, get on YouTube or, you know, we post out on Twitter, etc. before the games. Get involved. Other than that, not a lot else to say other than fingers crossed that we get at least a point against those scum down on the coast. Until next time, come on, you Palace.
Back of the Nest Review Show, sponsored by pitchdmm.com.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates are round. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.